driver doesn't have a word to say to us. I thought, oh, maybe he's upset with me because I wasn't waiting in the right place. And that's fine, you know, because I, far be it from me to get upset with anybody over something silly, right? I don't recognize that sentiment. So we asked him to stop at the Walgreens on the way back to the hotel. We needed, you know, a couple of little items. And we get back in, and Warren, how are
snacks? I needed snacks.
Yeah, well, some snacks. There were some snacks, and just if you know, a few little odds and ends, what have you. And so, how would you describe Clarence from that point on?
I would say that the moment we got back in the shuttle, he turned into a completely different person and started telling us stories about people picking up hookers.
Well, when was the Greg Anthony story? I mean, that was at least a couple of weeks before Super Bowl week, wasn't it? When
at least, yeah. And
Greg Anthony got arrested for soliciting a prostitute, right? The NBA analyst. And he says, he goes, have you guys heard this Greg Anthony story? I mean, this is out of the blue. And we're like, we're thinking it's got to be, unless there's something new. Yes, we have. And he started going into all the ways Anthony could have avoided it, because this is how you deal with your hooker, is how Clarence was giving us the lowdown.
And he was very, I think, unimpressed by the amount of money that Greg Anthony was spending on said lady of the night.
Right. Clarence apparently has a system. He's well-versed in these things. And clearly, Warren Sapp did not ride with Clarence during the week.
Correct.
Or we would not
because
be in this
avoided,
situation.
Right. Massive embarrassment.
Right.
What you don't say is, here's an amount of money, and now this is what I want from you. You don't say
exactly.
that, because if they're bugged, then you can obviously get into major trouble.
Right. Clarence went through the whole thing, how you give the surreptitious pat down to make sure they're not wearing a wire and the whole thing, and just everything you were supposed to do. I mean, it went from nothing, Tony, to, you know, full-blown. If you want to, I can imagine a few people that would have enjoyed that ride with Clarence, because they would have got more useful information, things that they were looking for that week in Phoenix. But
right, what a romantic experience. Hey, let me pat you down. And then,
right. Well, okay, for all he knows, we're a married couple, right? He doesn't know who we are, and he just launches into, you know, I don't know what he thinks. I don't know how things happen in Phoenix.
Or maybe
Arizona.
He thought I was, you know, needing some advice for later. Who knows?
Perhaps. I don't know. I just do not know. But it was one of the many interesting little moments that we had. Would you do it again?
Oh, of course. I loved every minute of it. Just the experience in general, it was so busy. You know, everyone's got somewhere to be. Everyone only has 10 minutes to do exactly what they need to do as far as interviews go. The handlers have everything scheduled. And so it's almost a whirlwind of crazy busyness where almost everyone's in a good mood too, though. So that was fun. And honestly, though, I would say the one thing I didn't expect is to talk so little about the actual Super Bowl. Because most of the people that are there are not obviously the players on the team that are competing. And so sometimes I would look up and I would go, oh yeah, there's a game in a couple days, and it's not a game that we really spent that much time delving into. So that was the only thing that I think surprised me a lot.
Yeah, I would say out of however many guests we have on, if we even ask half of them who they think is going to win the game.
Right.
Yeah, you often forget to even ask that. It's like you get involved in whatever conversation you're having with a guest that happens to be sitting down in front of you, and maybe you remember to ask, and maybe they're just telling enough stories that you're like, forget it. Who cares about the game coming up on Sunday? Let's just talk about the games they played in.
We talk about games all the time. You know, we can't talk to those guys all the time. So.
And you know, you want to avoid the same questions they've had all day, too, because you want them to be animated when they come on with you. What was the funny part? Oh, Will Shields. When they, you know, announced the Hall of Fame inductees, I was so happy for him because he had told us how the first 3 years, you know, he has been upset about kind of not getting in, and he was such a nice guy. I feel like I know a famous person now.
Yeah, he was, you know, he said he went from being really upset to, like, you know, by the time year three goes, he was just like, you know, from now it's just whatever happens kind of thing. He went through the.
But you know it's in there.
Oh, are you kidding me? You don't play that long and have the resume that he has and not want to have it capped off with an induction into the Hall of Fame. I thought he was very deserving. I was happy he got in. He was one of the more impressive people. That's the thing. You get to meet some people. You interview some of the same people every year. That's just the way it goes. But you get to meet some people for the first time and that were just terrific players. And I didn't know, you know, how involved Will Shields is with mentoring young players, working with the league, running a charity for abused women for the past two decades. And he went into how he started up his own bank, and he's got a couple of branches of his own bank now. And, you know, quite the entrepreneur that Will Shields.
Which, by the way, at that moment, Mojo's ears perked up, and Maurice was like, "Wait, bank? Did you just say bank?"
Right.
I need to talk to you.
Yeah, Maurice thinks he's making big money, and he is, but compared to normal human beings, he's not making bank money yet. He's not making that kind of bank. So, you know, if he's smart, he gets with the right people. And a lot of them, Maurice was carrying around the Pete Carroll book on, you know, basically, I think it's kind of how to win in life kind of thing. You know, how to
Run the ball. That may have been needed to be a chapter.
that should have been the title, because Maurice thinks that's the answer to every answer in life. Just run the ball more, and you'll be fine.
Run the ball, and you have Marshawn Lynch.
But several of those guys, well, certainly in that case, several of those guys were commenting that they had read that book as well, and were that was kind of like the book of the month club kind of situation.
Sure.
You know, kind of deal where they're all like, oh yeah, that's the one I'm reading right now too. So they're all looking for ways to motivate and elevate in their post playing careers. What'd you think about the game, the way it went down?
Well, I thought that it was going to be called the catch. That's how I thought this Super Bowl was going to be defined for years and years to come, just because that was unbelievable. And then, obviously, a few plays later, we have a completely different situation. I was so excited that I thought I picked the right team in Seattle. I thought the game, obviously, was fantastic. If you're a Jaguar fan watching that game, you are so impressed by the offensive lines of both teams. I mean, how many times were you sitting there going, how does he have that much time, whether it was Tom Brady or Russell Wilson? I mean, they just sat back there, and it was just, I feel like we haven't seen that in Jacksonville in a long time. So
I'm with you.
I took that away from the game, and just the overall gratitude I feel like that Tom Brady had in order to win that. And, you know, you had to think that he was thinking another one slipped by, only to change the tide so quickly. So I took all of that away, and then the I agree with you, Mike, the pulling of the pants down was just stupid and ridiculous.
I'm far from a prude, but it wasn't just the pulling of the pants. It was the completion of the act for Doug Baldwin. That know that's what you're going to be more known for a long time, Doug, than that. So, all right, LB, appreciate it. Thank you. We had a great time with you. And,
thank you so much for having me. I loved it.
Well, it's so tough to book you on this show now that you're a big star with Helmets and Heels, which, by the way, airs tonight. Give me the time you're going to be on tonight.
We'll be on from 7 to 8, and I'm still waiting for my call from Shad that he's going to join us as our guest.
Yeah, oh, come on. How have you not brought this up already? I know we probably mentioned it on Friday. But
I think he's probably eating dinner then.
The line of the week, all right, we go in to talk with Shad Khan, and we have a 10-minute window. It's from like 9:25, this is local time, so 11:25 to 11:35 Eastern on Friday morning. And we had a four-hour show, so we knew we were going to have a chance to replay it. And if you haven't heard it, it's on 1010XL.com on demand. And we go in there, and I interview Shad in my whispering voice. And when we're done, he comes up, and you're talking to him, and he turns to me and goes, "So, Mike, how do you know Lauren?" I'm like, "Well, I'm just a big fan of Helmets and Heels is all, and you know, it's just a coincidence that we happen to work at the same station." And, oh, yeah, she was my producer for about a half a year. But other than that, sir,
That was probably the best moment of the trip for me, was when he said to me, you know, "Oh, you know, don't give up on football." And that just, I said, "Of course I won't, Sean. Anything you say."
Right. Right. Well, then you told him where you started working, your new job.
Right.
I think he
right.
wants to invest. I think he wants to do a hostile takeover and elevate you to CEO. It was the sound of it to me.
Yeah, it's the landscape design group of North Florida.
All right, there you go. Maybe not a non-hostile takeover. They'd probably be very happy. Sean will overpay.
Yeah, probably.
And you'll run the company. And he's a fan of the Helmets and Heels ladies. So we'll listen for you guys tonight with whatever Super Bowl stories you've got left. LB, good to see you last week, and let's do it again soon.
All right, boys. Thanks so much for having me on.
All right, there she goes. And by do it again soon, Tony, I don't mean let's all go to Phoenix, Arizona.
No.
Let's just see each other. Santa Clara 2016, hashtag Super Bowl 2016, whatever. That's a Super Bowl or bust next year. After that, I don't know. We'll see. Houston, I guess, is the one after that. But Santa Clara, it's not as close to wine country as Lauren would hope, but I wouldn't doubt that she finds it in her repertoire to make
right.
a day trip.
Well, as Dave Robinson said when he joined us, that he wants to be at Super Bowl 50 next year as a member of the Green Bay Packers who won Super Bowls 1 and 2. And he's like, that's going to be pretty cool, but Super Bowl 51, that's the one he really wants to be at because that's the 50th anniversary of
him
winning.
Right, his first yeah. one, absolutely. So different strokes, whatever the case may be. He, the Packer Hall of Famer we had on for us for the first time since we've been covering these things. So there you go, Lauren Brooks. Here with us on 1010XL. Coming back, we will unveil all the goodies we collected on the week. What kind of free stuff did the media get during Super Bowl week? Well, a sampling of it, what made it off the cutting room floor, is in the swag bag, and we will award that next on 1010XL 92.5 FM. Swag bag! We all love free stuff, Tony. I do.
Yeah.
Grab as much of it as I possibly can wherever I go, whether I think I need it or not. Oh, what is that? I'll take it. Take one of those. I forgot to go back. There was something I wanted to go back for at the Arizona Host Committee table. I didn't. And I can't remember what it was, so I guess I probably didn't need it. You know what? Point is, I probably didn't need any of the stuff that we got. But they give us all kinds of free swag throughout the week, right? You just swag, stuff we all get.
Yep.
That's where swag comes from, okay?
Really?
And, yes.
I didn't know
You
that.
Didn't know that?
No.
We thought it was just a weird word that they made up for that?
I never put any thought about it.
Stuff we all get. That's right. That's what the genesis of the word swag is.
You learn something new every day.
Yeah, when it's free for everybody, it's a swag. You just get it for being there, just for showing up. You get swag as a Jaguar season ticket holder, for instance, right? You get all those wonderful coupon books and little doodads and discounts to golf courses and all the stuff that's a part of, not the main reason you're making your purchase. Those are extras thrown in for you, in theory, okay? Now, I didn't bring them in the car. We got a book that I really was hoping was like 50 years of Super Bowl history, and it's more like 50 years of Gatorade history, it appears, after thumbing through it. It was left on our table. I don't know who Frank and Rick talked to that left it on the table.
Right.
But it was there. I asked Frank, you keeping that book? Nope. Swag bag. So that's in there. We went to the Pro Bowl.
Yeah.
We always seemingly, every media person at the Pro Bowl, in addition to the nice little box of lunch that they set up for you, they give you a program, or the Super Bowl, same thing. It was the first time I've gone to the Pro Bowl, but it was the same thing as you go to any Super Bowl. You get a few little souvenirs at your thing. You actually get more at the Super Bowl, but they give us one of those wonderful programs. You know, it's like 15, 20 bucks, whatever, mm-hmm. and the official flip card. If you don't know what a flip card is, basically the lineups, alphabetically, the depth charts, the whole thing. These are produced by the NFL on a weekly basis for every game. So it's kind of a cool little collectible as far as that goes. You also get some literature from the city of Chicago, Tony, believe it or not, because the NFL draft is coming up in Chicago.
Yes, it is.
That's this year. And I think we got a little pin. There are not many pins around this year. There's usually like a media party pin that we get. There's usually some pins floating around on Radio Row, whether it's from future host committees. Didn't see Houston or Santa Clara have a display, right?
Nope.
I didn't see. And usually they're there in advance, like trying to entice you. Hey, don't forget about us. Make sure you book your travel to come see us as well. Here are some great things to do in our city, and they try to get the word out. The best appearance like that was in Dallas a few years back, as the city is under an ice storm, the mayor of Indianapolis, next year's Super Bowl came in, mm-hmm. and he was giving out hats and scarves, which were much needed because most people didn't expect an ice storm in Dallas. So he immediately got us thinking good things about the city of Indianapolis. Now, what else did we get in the swag bag? We got this. Where did we get this?
That's
squeeze
bottle? Media party.
Media party. This is pretty nice. This is the Arizona Super Bowl logo. It's like a workout squeeze bottle.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You drop a few bucks on that at your local store. You got a snapback hat. Good. It's adjustable, which is key. bright orange.
Yeah.
I don't know about the bright orange.
It was orange or purple. Those were the two color choices I had when they were handing out those hats. I'm not even sure the guy really wanted to give me one, but he was coming through with somebody. I can't remember who it was, and I was like, hey, dude, can I get a hat? And he kind of looks at me, and he's like, yeah, I guess.
Right. Oh, yeah. Where are you? Oh, Jacksonville? Really?
Yeah.
That does us no good. We're not going to.
So it's in the swag bag.
Well, a guy came up with the same hats. Maurice and I are doing a show on Sirius, Maurice Jones-Drew, and he puts a hat in front of each of us. Maurice grabs them both. Like, he can't afford a hat. And I'm like, hey, yeah, I want to give that to somebody. That's fantastic. We told you about the official Super Bowl XLIX edition Skittles, the Seattle mix, only for losers, apparently now.
Boom.
Because they lost. We got a couple of wonderful notepads, including one with the Super Bowl logo on there. We've got the highly coveted Super Bowl media party.
That's among the strangest things.
Flip-flops.
That we've been in the
swag bag. We got the flip-flops. They're size large.
Yep.
Okay. I didn't know what size your feet were. I wasn't going to carry around multiple pair of flip-flops. I went with size large. Hope they're good for you. Got a couple of cigars from the cigar bar.
Mm-hmm.
Those are in the car as well. Got some Old Spice Refresh Body Spray.
There you go.
Because that's what they hand you on the way out of Media Day.
Yes,
here, go refresh yourself. Have you figured out what this thing is?
No.
It's a little piece of, I don't know what kind of material
koozie?
It is. It looks like a koozie for the world's smallest beer, right?
Yeah.
My wife figured this out. I think it's a luggage handle.
Oh, it might.
Right?
That makes sense.
You wrap it around the handle of your luggage. It has the NFL logo on there. It has Nationwide, so it can remind you about all the dead kids,
that's
too.
Right.
And that way you can
I've
identify
heard
your luggage.
That kid would have handed the ball to Marshawn Lynch, but he's
oh,
dead.
There's no question. Right. But I died, so I couldn't do that. We've got some NFL.com and NFL-related, NFL.com phone cases.
Mm-hmm.
Those are kind of nice,
yeah.
Right, for your cell phones. I don't know what kind of cell. If they had fit mine, you would have had one less in the thing. We got some Degree Motion Sense Dry Spray.
There
that was
go.
Courtesy of Jimmy Graham.
Is that the commercial where you can snap your fingers? Have you seen those
Do
things?
Not know.
There's some commercial campaign. I don't know if it's Degree or somebody else where they're showing the people put it on underarm.
Yeah.
And then they'll wipe their hand across their armpit and then snap their fingers and say, I'm still dry enough to
my
snap
fingers
my
are dry.
Fingers. Yeah. I'm like, that's gross.
Shall we test?
No.
Okay. This one was handled by Jimmy Graham.
Okay.
So do with what you
it's
want.
Got Saints colors.
If you got a crush on Jimmy Graham, you go for it, all right? You can do with whatever you like there. We got some NFL Game Rewind earbuds.
Yeah.
Those were kind of nice. What were they giving those out for? I have no idea.
That was over at the SAP table, that stats table.
Yes. But they're, a little pair of spare earbuds if you need a pair
That's
of earbuds.
That's the phone cases were, too.
And it gave a nice little carrying case for them,
yeah.
too. So that was kind of cool. We've got the official NFL Super Bowl Media Day radio, FM scanner radio. Don't have any idea if you could pick up anything on this except at Media Day.
Right.
Chances
I've never tried
no.
it anywhere else.
I haven't either, but I have oodles of these at the house from over the years from Media Days gone by, so you can see what that's all about. We did save for you some Pro Bowl cookies, Grandma's
oh, yeah.
cookies. Nice two-pack. Those were delicious, by the way. So there is some grub in there. All the chips and stuff never survived. And then an assortment of Super Bowl commemorative pens. For you. And this handy-dandy actual swag bag that they give us on Media Day as you're walking out. Thanks
yeah.
for coming to Media Day. Here is some Old Spice Refresh body spray and something to carry it in. So I think that's pretty much a majority of everything we got this
yeah,
year.
Yeah, I think that may be it.
Estimated value in your mind. Snapback hat's probably at least $20, right?
You're probably looking at what?
I'm guessing $100.
$10 for the program, maybe 20.
Program's probably 15. I bet your cover price is 15 on that.
That's somewhere between 70 and $100, I'm guessing.
Somewhere between. I mean, those are really nice flip-flops, he says sarcastically. So that's what you got. I don't know what they gouge you for the men's Degree Motion Sense Dry Spray these days, but that's got to be at least like $750,
you
right?
You still snap your fingers.
Right, snap your fingers between that and the Old Spice, the earbuds, the grandma's cookies, the cell phone cases, the collector's Skittles, can't go wrong with that. And, 50 years of Gatorade history.
That's right.
Right?
I forgot about the book.
Whoa. Okay. So all that together, Tony, we asked you to predict who would win the game and make a prediction on something that would happen during the game. Four people were able to correctly predict the Patriots and match it with a prediction. One guy predicted Tom Brady would throw for 300 yards. I took that as 300-plus yards and three touchdowns. Never bothered to put his prediction of who would win the game in there, however. So he would have had a shot at it. Here they are in no particular order, the correct predictions that came true. Miguel Perez said Richard Sherman would not have an interception in addition to picking the Patriots to win. So okay, that came true. Jags fan 2468 predicted Pats win and Edelman and Gronkowski each score a touchdown. That came true. Hashtag TJ Neem, that's how, what his Twitter handle is, predicted that James Devlin, Patriot fullback, would score as many touchdowns as LeGarrette Blount, which the total was zero, so that was true.
Yes, it was.
And Bubba Gump 55 predicted three or more total turnovers in the football game. I'll skip the preliminaries. We all voted, you, Lauren, and I, and we ranked them 1 through 4. Four being the least likely, so the most points you could get is 12 high-score wins. And so Sherman's no interceptions and three or more total turnovers tied for last, 6 points. We didn't think those were – I mean, Richard Sherman doesn't get an interception every game. There are plenty of games people don't throw anywhere near Richard Sherman.
Sure.
So the three total turnovers, you could see that happening. And between two teams, it's not super unlikely to happen. So it came down – to Edelman and Gronk scoring touchdowns and James Devlin scoring as many TDs as Blount. Lauren made that one, the Devlin one, I think her first pick. I made it my second, but you were not nearly as impressed with that one. I just thought because Devlin had only scored one touchdown all year, if Blount scores, it's going to be very difficult to duplicate, and you don't know if Blount's going to score or not. But as it turned out, you and I both voted number one, Edelman and Gronk both scoring touchdowns. Lauren gave it 2 points. In the end, Edelman and Gronk, Jags fan, 24-68 wins with 10 out of a possible 12.
Hey!
You get $70 to $100 worth of worthless junk from Super Bowl week in the Super Bowl swag bag contest, third annual. And we can only imagine how good it'll be for Super Bowl 50.
I think y'all were both sleeping a little bit on that turnover thing, by the way. I don't think either one of these teams turned the ball over much at all this year.
You only put it in second place.
I know. Well, I know.
Maybe we were.
Who knows? It doesn't matter. We got a winner.
That's the way we felt. We voted. It's done. It's over with. I will contact Jags fan 2468. I won't have to because everyone listens to the Jaguars today in a constant loop. All right, live and then replay it all day long.
That's right.
Any of your favorite sources such as 1010XL.com on demand section or at Jaguars.com if you want to download it that way. All right, coming back this date in football history, the Honda Drive around the NFL and on to bigger and better things. Jaguars today, live from Everbank, Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
And now, this date in football history.
All right, this date in football history. Oh, it's going to be birthday time. You know, it's off season, Tony. We're going to celebrate some of the greats who've had birthdays on this date throughout the course of the off season. The Buffalo Bills made it to 4 consecutive Super Bowls, right? And it's an interesting, unique feat.
Mm-hmm.
Does not come close to making them a dynasty. You got to win some championship along the way. You made them an AFC championship game dynasty. Can you name any other team that went to 3 consecutive Super Bowls?
3 consecutive Super Bowls?
Yes. We all know Dallas won 3 in 4 years. So did New England. Didn't go to 3 consecutive in that time frame. Pittsburgh won 6 in 2 years. They won 2, took 2 years off, won 2 more, I believe, is how that played out for them.
They did not.
I will skip the suspense part of the program, and I will jump right ahead to the early 70s Miami Dolphins. Led by Bob Greasy, the birthday boy, 1945, and your 1971 NFL MVP. Lost it the first time. Then, of course, the second year, Greasy got hurt. Earl Morrill came in and led him throughout the regular season and into the playoffs when he finally hit the wall of ineffectiveness. Realize the Dolphins in 72, undefeated, were 2-point underdogs to the Washington Redskins in the Super Bowl in Vegas. That just goes to show you, they did win them all, and so they'll always have that argument as why they may be the greatest. I don't know anybody considers that the greatest team if you were to line them all up and play a round-robin kind of scenario, you know, with a time machine somehow involved. You know what I'm talking about? So, anyway, Bob Greasy, Jeff Christie, I believe former Gator, born in this date in 1969. Casey Walden, former Seminole, also born in this date in 1969. That's what I got for you on this date in football history. It's brought to you by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry, located on Gate Parkway. If you need a family dentist or cosmetic work done, or the Somnomed custom fitted snore guard. That is a popular item right now. 620-9225. Visit jamesjmccall.com for a complete list of comprehensive care services. That is this date in football history.
Now, the Honda Drive Around the NFL, brought to you by your Jacksonville area Honda dealers.
Well, Seattle Seahawks cornerback Richard Sherman will be undergoing Tommy John surgery following the season. He played through that elbow injury in the Super Bowl, still able to get through the entire game, but is expected to undergo that procedure here in the next week or so. Usually the timetable for a pitcher to recover from that is 9 to 12 months. Kind of funny, Pete Carroll, when asked about the timetable for Richard Sherman, said, quote, "I really don't think it'll be 9 to 12 months, so long as Sherm doesn't want to become a late-inning reliever." So we'll see when Richard Sherman does get back with the Seattle Seahawks this offseason. Rex Ryan has a tattoo of his wife on his right arm. That tattoo has been wearing the green number 6 of former Jets quarterback Mark Sanchez for the past several years. But Rexy is no longer with the Jets, now the head coach of the Buffalo Bills. Over the weekend, Ryan got the green filled in with the Bills blue instead. So now his wife is wearing the jersey of Bills' second-year punter, Colton Schmidt.
Now, did he ever put the name on the jersey or just the number?
Just the number.
Okay, so there you go, Colton Schmidt.
There you go, Colton.
Excellent. Whatever floats your boat, Mr. and Mrs. Ryan. Is that everything?
That's it.
You see this, Larry Foote, who longtime NFL linebacker, primarily with the Steelers, most recently with the Arizona Cardinals. He's one of those guys you keep trying to kill off, and he just keeps playing every game, right? He's almost indestructible, or so it has seemed, late in his career, and was talking about Marshawn Lynch and his lack of cooperation with the media during Super Bowl week. And this is what Foote had to say. He said, quote, "You hear in the media, he," meaning Lynch, "he always mentions his foundation and what he likes to do for the city of Oakland. I'm from the same type of urban environment that he's from, and the biggest message that he's giving these kids, he might not want to admit it, is the hell with authority." Saying, quote, "I don't care, find me, I'm going to grab my crotch, I'm going to do it my way." Foote continues, "In the real world, it doesn't work that way, it just doesn't. How can you keep a job? I mean, you've got these inner city kids, they don't listen to teachers, they don't listen to police officers, principals, and these guys can't even get a job because they all say F authority." And I guess there's some of that. I don't know if he's taking it too deep in there, but this is a guy that I'm sure a lot of the kids he works with do look up to. Look, this is life. If you're in a position, people say, well, why do they tolerate? Well, you know why they tolerate? He's exceptionally good at what he does.
Yep.
Okay? He is for the trouble, if they consider it trouble, and Seattle seems to be fine with Marshawn Lynch, for whatever trouble he causes or uproar he causes, he more than makes up for it with his play on the field, which is the primary reason he's there, and that's why he has the contract that he has, and that's why they're talking about that they've already offered him a significant raise on a new contract. I believe he's got 1 year left on the deal.
He does.
But nobody thinks he's going to play for the figure that's there. It'll be interesting to see if he wants to play for any figure. You know, does he come back with a vengeance? Does he feel slighted? You know, you've got Foote, who tweeted, you know, and he has nothing to do with Seattle specifically, but he tweeted at the end of the game that he felt basically, or a tweet that indicated that Russell Wilson wants to prop up, or Pete Carroll wants to prop up Russell Wilson. He tweeted, "Stop trying to make your golden boy a hero." In other words, letting him throw for the touchdown, which would have been his third of the game, maybe Super Bowl MVP honors that come with it in a last-second Super Bowl victory kind of scenario. Tony, I don't think that was what was going on with Pete Carroll, but it is something to watch that it is more widespread than I thought it would be that opinion is out there.
Yeah, it's interesting. The fallout in Seattle after the call they made on that second and goal play is exactly what the fallout is on sports radio on a Monday after that kind of thing happens. You know, it's everyone is so frustrated that they're trying to figure out where to point the finger for where the blame actually needs to go. And so you've heard it. Marshawn Lynch handled it the right way. Are you surprised you didn't get the ball No, it's a team sport. They made the call they made. Marshawn basically just deflected everything that he could. I thought that Pete Carroll fell on the grenade as well as he possibly could after the game. Said, look, he asked me, Bevel asked me, should we pass the ball here? I said, yeah, pass it.
You know what Carroll said then yesterday? He said, that may not have been the last time we passed it.
Right. Even so, who knows what they wanted to do?
He said we may have thrown it a couple of times and ultimately tried to run it in.
But that bouncing ball, I mean, it got smacked back when Bevel said, yeah, we threw the ball on that down. Lockett wasn't strong enough going for the ball. So now he's putting some blame on Lockett. And then you have the fist fight on the field with those players and all that frustration coming out in the locker room because all these theories about what actually happened on that play are from players. That's the odd part of it. It's an anonymous player in that locker room saying they're trying to prop up Russell Wilson over Marshawn Lynch. It's guys like Bruce Irvin who are sitting there in the locker room after they lost the Super Bowl going, why didn't we give the ball to Marshawn? It's the frustration within that locker room usually doesn't spill over like this. You have to wonder what exactly is going to be the fallout in Seattle. Something has got to happen to get everybody back on the same page in that locker room. They've been so good for the last 3 years. They probably should have won their second championship in a row on Sunday night if they had just done things a different way as opposed to how they did them. So you got to figure out some way to get them back on the same page because a lot of those same guys are going to be in that locker room and they have to believe in Russell Wilson as their quarterback because he's not going anywhere in the near future in Seattle.
You know, it's interesting. I got a tweet yesterday. Said this person had to turn off the show because they could no longer listen to you and Jeff Loggeman. And I'm paraphrasing here. Basically, you're glee because you're both New England haters. And I'm like, what show are you listening to? And I say, really, I don't know if you realize how paranoid you sound when you say that. Maybe that just is the case with every Patriot fan. Everyone's out to get you. And he said, well, actually, I couldn't continue listening, so maybe they said something different, but it seemed like they were talking more about what Seattle failed to do rather than what New England did. I said, yeah, like every other sports
right.
broadcaster in America.
Right.
Right. The way that game played out, that is what everybody's talking about. Because
sure.
Everyone feels, look, while the guy made a great play, had Seattle opted to not put the ball in the air, 97% of people feel that it is a foregone conclusion that on one of those attempts, Marshawn Lynch would have been able to get the ball into the end zone.
And, you know, Paul Spicer and I were on last night, and after having had the conversation for basically 24 hours at that point, I came on and said, look, I do want to start it by saying that is one of the best defensive plays I've ever seen in the Super Bowl. The play that he made on that ball is one of the best defensive plays I've ever seen in a Super Bowl. That kind of moment, incredible from that young man. I don't think he should have been given the opportunity to make that play. There was no reason for Seattle to put him in a position to make that kind of play. He took full advantage of it, and he deserves all the credit and the attention that he's gotten over the course of the last couple days for having made that play. But the conversation is going to be about what Seattle did on second and goal and will continue to be about that, especially if players are going to continue talking about it the way that they're talking. The dialogue is not like anything we're used to coming out of an NFL locker room. It's usually not aired out like this. And while we all kind of thought there may be little currents in that Seattle locker room about Marshawn versus Russell, this is really public.
Russell versus Percy Harvin.
Right.
Was that true? Was it not? That whole thing got played out. And unless there was an undercurrent of this already, I don't think you're getting this on, you know, if they opted to go with, you know, if this had happened in New England, well, then again, Giselle's not in the locker room, but she put the blame squarely on Welker last time.
She did.
That was someone.
You can't throw it and catch it.
That's not a player, though. You know, I couldn't think of too many circumstances. I'm not saying it wouldn't have ever happened where you would have got that kind of questioning. Are you just trying to play favorites with the quarterback? Like, wow. I mean, how much resentment is there in that locker room for the way Russell Wilson's portrayed above all others as the, you know, the saintly head of the Seattle Seahawks franchise? You got to wonder.
And it's weird because from the outside, I don't get that sense of, maybe there's more of it around that team in that locker room.
You don't get the sense that the NFL and the media props up Russell Wilson like he's one of the golden children of sports?
I don't.
Oh, I do. I do.
I don't.
They talk about Russell Wilson in reverent tones. I mean, beyond, you know, Russell Wilson is, you know, kind of like a Tim Tebow with an NFL game. You know, not to that degree, not with the hoopla that comes with it, but just the way he conducts himself. I could definitely see that. If that would rankle some people, you're smart enough when you're winning to keep your mouth shut, but one loss, they show their true colors, man. They couldn't handle it. They're a bully who got punched in the mouth.
They did.
And they lost their cool, and then they just wanted to start to fight everybody. If you can't win a game, win the fight. Okay, whatever, sixth grade. You know, so, hey, one-time Super Bowl champion, Seattle Seahawks, not too shabby, but certainly didn't conduct themselves like champs at the end of that contest. All right, we'll come back. The guys who did conduct themselves like champs throughout their career got themselves inducted into the Hall of Fame. Did they all deserve it in this class? We'll debate and discuss that coming up next. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, Jaguars today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. All right, a couple of things on the Twitter here, at MD underscore 1010XL, at 1010XL Fat Tony. Irish Jaguar, our boy Stevie over there, makes a good point. The theory that they're trying to prop up Russell Wilson and not Marshawn Lynch, well, they gave him the ball at the four. It was New England's defense that must have been trying to prop up Russell Wilson, because they're the ones who stopped him at the one, right? Had he scored...
It's such a weird thing, because they pretty clearly explained why they did what they did on second down. The whole country disagrees with what they actually did on the play call.
I don't like the play call, but I don't mind the fact that they threw the football.
Right. They've pretty clearly explained why they made the play call that they made, and none of it sounded like we just wanted to see Russell Wilson throw the game-winning touchdown. That none of that sounded like that. In fact, they said, if he throws an incomplete pass, we're just burning the play anyway. We feel pretty good about what we got on third and fourth down anyway. That's what they said their rationale was for that play call. I don't sense prop up Russell Wilson in that at all, but players do, and that's the interesting part.
Honestly, the only prop up anything I can remember was prop up the fridge, let him get the touchdown in place of Walter Payton, but that was in a blowout victory, which made it even all the more inexplicable at the time that I guess Ditka, I don't know, just... I don't think Ditka had anything against Peyton, you wouldn't think. I mean, Peyton carried that franchise for years. You kidding me? I don't know. That was just a weird, oversight, got caught up in the moment, wanted to rub it in. I don't know what he was trying to do with the whole William Refrigerator Perry deal. Icky Woods, by the way, was making the rounds this week.
Yeah,
of Radio Row. My man... It was probably the friendliest guy on the floor. We didn't have him on the show. Didn't have him on any of the shows.
Icky's glad to be back, baby.
Are you kidding me? He played 4 years, Tony, in the late 80s, early 90s. They didn't make the kind of money that they're making right now.
No.
And that cold cut money's coming at just the right time, you know. And Jones-Drew was like, oh, man, this guy, he's selling out. I'm like, what? You've never done a commercial? You didn't sell out for Winn-Dixie pushing that little cart around the store? Kidding me?
If Geico came to you,
please
give me a break.
Give me the mojo touchdown dance. Give me one of your pick a dance and go do it, and we're going to pay you X. If X is high enough, you are absolutely, quote, selling out.
Right.
Please let me sell out to that degree.
Considering the number of friends I've had that I've had to explain who that is, he's the cold cuts guy. I'm like, he's doing the Icky Shuffle. He's
doing the Icky Shuffle.
That's Icky Woods.
That's his move. That's all he's got.
Right.
But let's not forget, I believe it was his rookie year, was the leading rusher in the Super Bowl. And much like Seattle and San Francisco, Tony, I want to say Cincinnati had a 10-point second-half lead in that game. And Joe Montana let him back, and
ouch,
John Taylor caught the TD and his only catch of the game. And that's the way it went as far as that goes. Also, several agreeing that the NFL does treat Russell Wilson like a golden boy, as Mike underscore Will 904 described him, a programmed NFL robot who can do no wrong. I don't think he means his game, because clearly it's not his
right
game. I think he means, you know, he is... Nuke LaLouche in terms of his dealing with the media, right? And always has the right answer. Always, it doesn't mean it can't be sincere, but that's the way he comes off to some people. So there you have it. Hall of Fame.
People don't like nice guys. It's weird.
Sometimes that's the case. If they're force fed down your throat and you have to be told that, you know, sometimes it gets a little much, a little sickening.
Sure, I guess.
You know, it does. There, you never.
I as I tweeted Duval Doom, I like Russell Wilson too much to be a part of this one. Like, okay. I don't sense
you
that from Russ.
You can't see that, though? You can't see he's one of the NFL golden boys?
No, I can see that, but I don't think it's too much. I think there are guys that have been too much in the past. I happen to really like Russell Wilson. As I've said before, he's my favorite player in the league.
I gotcha.
So
you're blinded.
This conversation, there may be people that are really annoyed by Russell Wilson's coverage. Me, it doesn't bother me at all.
All right. Hall of Fame class that got inducted this weekend. A couple of contributors went in and a senior selection. We knew Mick Tinglehoff was going in. We discussed that ahead of time. And on the senior side of things, Ron Wolf and Bill Poley, and that's fine. I'm talking about the guys who are the players who are being voted on this weekend. Junior Seau seemed to be a no-brainer, right?
Yeah.
I at least he wouldn't have been top my ballot, but it was a no-brainer that he was getting in. No question whatsoever. I truly am shocked that Orlando Pace is not in the Hall of Fame today. As you know, he will be eventually, Tony, but man, I felt like the Tim Brown thing. I'm not saying Tim Brown's undeserving of being in the Hall of Fame, but I felt like they thought, all right, Tim's waited his time like Andre Reed did, right? We're going to get him in now because you look next year, Terrell Owens is coming up. Marvin Harrison will be on the ballot again. This is his time to get in. If we think he's a Hall of Fame, he needs to go now because it's only going to get thicker with wide receivers from here on out. I don't have a problem with Tim Brown being in the Hall of Fame, by the way. I think that played into it, the timing of it.
He's waited long enough that, I mean, it's not like he's a first ballot guy. He's a Hall of Famer. The NFL, do they put five guys in every year?
Five is the max, and I think they strive for that now because you've got such a logjam, such a backlog. It's not like baseball. When you get baseball, you can vote for 10 guys, and some years you get one, some years you get none.
Yeah, and I kind of like that.
I don't have a problem with that, but in football, in baseball, you're playing basically, historically, nine guys are the offense, nine guys are the defense.
The numbers are much deeper
right.
in the National Football League than they would be in baseball, but I kind of like the idea of you have to have this kind of number in order to be a Hall of Famer.
Well, Will Shields, 12 Pro Bowls in 14 seasons, I think certainly, and you look at some of the rushers that led the league behind him, guys like Priest Holmes and Larry Johnson. I mean, they had renowned as the best offensive line in football, or among the best, certainly among the top two or three in any given year, practically his entire career. I mean, really, yeah, for that stretch of time. And I did not meet a more impressive individual among the guys I met for the first time this week. That isn't the ultimate barometer of getting into the Hall of Fame or not. So Will Shields, I thought, Will Shields, Orlando Pace, Junior Seau, I thought were slam dunks. Orlando Pace did not get in. That surprised me. Okay. Charles Haley, not surprised he got in. Surprised probably that he waited this long, but I never had a single interaction with Charles Haley, but everything you have heard about Charles Haley.
It's a personality thing.
Whew, he had some issues. I mean, he wanted to fight everybody on his own team, on the other team. Didn't, just a loose cannon of a guy, and that may be putting it mildly. Guy's been a part of five Super Bowl championship teams, and who was the guy for the Lakers in the 80s, the center that used to sit on the end of the bench. Somebody will think of the name of that. He wasn't that guy. You know, he wasn't coattailing his way to five Super Bowl rings.
No, he was a key piece on defense.
An
for
integral
five
part
championships,
of it, right?
Yeah.
So I don't think anybody – I don't have an issue with Charles Haley. He didn't make my top five, but he was in that first or second spot, you know, that when we did our – ballot, the guys we would have voted for. So no problem there as far as that goes. The one that bugs me is Jerome Bettis. It really, really bothers me. I think he's being rewarded because he's such, or perceived to be such, a great guy. And yes, he is very high on the NFL's all-time rushing list. But because he, and maybe you want to give him points for durability, but that's what it took to get him there, Tony. The guy averaged 3.9 yards per carry in his NFL career. You can talk about, well, you know, he wasn't that kind of runner. Well, hey, there are plenty of guys who, quote unquote, weren't that kind of runner. I can't imagine there are too many players in the National Football League, running backs, that average under 4 yards a carry for their career. I think in a 13-year career, he only topped 4 yards per carry, only topped 3.9 four times in his NFL career. Never led the league in rushing. had a number of 1,000-yard seasons, had a couple of real, had three really good seasons, 1,400 yards or more. But what was he known for? Being a bulldozer, right? Short yardage, getting the tough yards. Only twice in his career did he score double-figure touchdowns. He wins the Super Bowl in his final game. He wasn't the focal point of that football team, but nevertheless, so he wins Rookie of the Year, and he wins the Super Bowl to bookend his career. He was a good player. There's no way in hell, in my opinion, that Jerome Bettis should be in ahead of a guy like Marvin Harrison, for instance, who I didn't think deserved to get in this time, but ultimately will get into the Hall of Fame.
Look, I like Jerome Bettis. That's one of those things.
And I think that's the first thing everybody says.
Right. I like Jerome Bettis. I don't. When you look at the guys that he's being compared to for this Hall of Fame class, I don't think he should have been in this Hall of Fame class. It's when you look at the other guys that were being discussed in that room, whether you go to Kurt Warner or we've already talked about a few of these guys, but Orlando Pace, Marvin Harrison, you know I had him as one of my five. Kevin Green is a guy that was a dominant player.
A dominant player
at his position.
Absolutely.
For multiple years. When you look at Terrell Davis, I get it. He doesn't have the career numbers. Maybe
Who's a better player at their peak?
Terrell Davis.
Not even close.
Right. Terrell Davis. Terrell Davis was maybe the best running back in football for a period of 3 or 4 years. And Jerome Bettis can't ever make that argument. I don't have a problem with Jerome Bettis eventually being in the Hall of Fame. And pretty much once you get onto the list of the 10 finalists, eventually you're going to be in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. It's that they put him in ahead of those other guys that we were just mentioning, Terrell Davis and Kevin Green and Kurt Warner. He's not more of a Hall of Famer than any of those guys.
They had 15 modern-day finalists, and the first round of voting, they cut out the bottom five. And I don't have a problem with the guys that they cut out, Morton Anderson, even Terrell Davis. I get it. I would give him my vote for the Hall of Fame. I get why he doesn't get in because of the longevity issue. But I like to see, you know, if you're a Tony Boselli supporter, let's keep having Terrell Davis's name be up there because that's a, you know, a conversation about guys who were brilliant for a shorter period of time. Tony Boselli was a more dominant player than Terrell Davis over more years than Terrell Davis was. Terrell Davis has Super Bowl rings. That's what is a big boost to this. And, you know, performed well in the postseason as well. John Lynch got eliminated early. Don Coryell and Jimmy Johnson got eliminated. Didn't think any of those guys were going to get in. The next group, the second tier, was Tony Dungy, who, again, Tony Dungy versus Jimmy Johnson. Why Tony Dungy over Jimmy Johnson? Jimmy Johnson won 2 Super Bowls. He built that team. Tony Dungy built the team up, couldn't get him over the hump, and Gruden came in and took his team and won a Super Bowl. Now he won one in Indy. I'm not saying Tony Dungy's not a very good coach, but he's not. To me, his resume doesn't stack up better than Jimmy Johnson. Championships are what it's about. Regardless, Kevin Green is in that group. Marvin Harrison's in that group. Orlando Pace and Kurt Warner all made the second 10, so they were the next group out. I would be very surprised if Pace, Harrison, I think all those guys eventually get in. People like Tony Dungy so much that that same Jerome Bettis factor is going to factor in with that guy. T.O. comes on the ballot next year. T.O. compared to Marvin Harrison, who would you put in? You could vote for one. T.O. It's not a question. I say it's not even close. Marvin Harrison was phenomenal numbers. Okay.
Terrell Owens, there may be a personality thing, too.
And that's the question.
With a guy like Terrell Owens, because I think there were enough people who didn't like him.
Anybody accuse Terrell Owens of murdering anyone?
No.
Okay.
No.
What about Harrison?
Terrell Owens, when you go look at all the numbers, T.O.'s one of the 3 or 4 best receivers that's ever played the game,
right?
Statistically.
He should be a first ballot Hall of Famer.
Yeah.
Even in this era of pass-happy
craziness. You can count me among one of those who really disliked Terrell Owens for most of his career, but I acknowledge how great a football player he was.
If you're going to vote for Lawrence Taylor, and I'm not saying that he was on the level of Lawrence Taylor, but if you're going to throw out everything that Lawrence Taylor did off the field, he's a much worse guy than Terrell Owens ever dreamed of being. Terrell Owens, was he a little bit selfish? Sure. Did he act kind of selfish?
He was a clown at times.
Did he have issues with dropping passes? That was his biggest issue in terms of being a player.
Can you imagine what he would have been if he didn't?
Right. He had some easy drops, but I think Terrell Owens on the field, no question. It'll be interesting to see if he gets in on the first ballot next time around. All right, we'll come back. Fan Feedback Spotlight today brought to you by the Tom Bush Family Dealerships asks you, what's your early lean for Super Bowl 50? What's the matchup? Getting a lot of Jags love, making a run. in 2015, Tony, and we'll see you in Santa Clara for all of that. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, live in the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios here at Everbank Field on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. Hello, Cat. Cat just walked in the room. Jackson DeVille. Didn't see him performing at the Super Bowl, Tony. Come on, the Pro Bowl or any of those other places this weekend.
I wasn't asked.
You weren't asked.
You
should have crashed the party, man.
Well, you know, I did that for probably the first 10 years. I went to Super Bowl each year and then booked a bunch of appearances and coordinated mascot appearances and stuff.
Right.
Kind of been there, done that.
I hear you. People were like, you didn't go to the game? People were like, what do you mean you didn't stay in Arizona for the game? Nah, we've been to a few. You know what I mean?
I got a bunch of stuff going on here with Jackson and also with opening a new place down in Jack's Beach.
Do tell. Free plug. Let's go. Come on.
Free plug. Hop Tinger Jack's Beach will be opening in a couple weeks next to the Shim Sham Room. But the big thing that I got going on right now is the Jacksagram for Valentine's Day. And, of course, if you want to say I love you to that special someone, there's only one way to do that, and that's to have Jackson DeVille bust into their office, school, restaurant.
It's the most romantic way to do it.
But this is the 19th year of it, and it is hilarious every single time because I bust in, make a huge scene, bring roses, chocolates.
What's your range? How far do you your range?
You know, we try to keep it in the Jacksonville regional area. We've gone all the way down to St. Augustine.
You will go to St. Augustine.
Up to Brunswick, but we move those on the day before. So we're doing deliveries on the 12th, 13th, and 14th.
What if someone's anniversary happens to coincide with Valentine's Day?
That was pretty good planning on their part because they knock out the
gifts. It's called the two-for-one, baby! It's called the two-for-one!
It's all at one. But, yeah, anybody who wants to get one, I'm doing bookings right now. That's what I'm running around.
Cat, where can we book you? I'm going to have to talk to you.
All you got
to
do is email jackson@jaguars.com.
jackson@jaguars.com.
J-A-X-S-O-N. A lot of people leave the S out. jaxson@jaguars.com. Email me right now. I'm taking bookings over the next few days, and only going to be about 30 spots available. So.
All right. We'll have to dicker on price range here, Tony. I have a feel. I believe we got a free plug for I'm a Tinghoffers. What is it? What's it?
Hop Tingers. Hop Tinger.
Tinghoffers. See? We'll talk Hop Tinger. Oh, I'm a, you know me, Tony. I'm a big craft beer guy.
Craft beer and sausage house.
Did we say sausage fest or house? As far as a house. As far as that goes. All right. Well, that'll appeal to somebody, I'm sure. So there you go. Check it out. The cat. He's always up to something. Jackson@jaguars.com. I may look into that, actually. He can crash in at my wife's.
I've seen the videos. They're really funny.
Place of business down there. All right. Today, Tony, Fan Feedback Spotlight brought to you by the Tom Bush Family of Dealerships, asking Jaguar fans, what drives you? Well, you're going to have to, if you're driving, you're going to have to go pretty far next year to Santa Clara, California. Yeah. South of San Francisco and Oakland in the Bay Area, as like, all those folks out there like to refer to it. So, who are the early favorites in people's mind to match up in Super Bowl 50?
From Kevin, we got Packers versus the Ravens, but we'll probably have different answer after free agency. From Nick, Jaguars and Packers. Jags win Super Bowl 50. Hashtag I believe.
Why not?
Hashtag I can dream. From at Irish Jaguar, in the interest of consistency, Jaguars v. Packers. From Ronald, we got Packers v. Patriots. From Brian, Lions versus Jaguars. Jags ruin a season for Jim Caldwell again. And from Black Dog, we got Packers versus Ravens.
If I said, Tony, your life depended on it. Okay, I know it's silly to bet with your life, but, you know, or something extremely significant depended on it. Okay. How many teams would I have to let you name before you felt assured that you were going to reach the correct two, one on each side?
Let's see. With the possibility of Manning coming back, it would be Denver and New England. Probably Baltimore and Pittsburgh I would throw in there. The Colts just because.
No San Diego?
I'm just asking.
I'd feel okay without San Diego in there.
I'd
feel okay with only the Patriots out of the East. I would agree with that.
So those would be my five.
I think those are reasonable. I can't see Cincinnati getting over that hump, but it wouldn't be completely. What about Kansas City?
No.
Okay.
I don't think
the only team to beat both Seattle and New England this year.
I get that, but I don't think they're good enough to make a run in the playoffs.
So you need to go five deep in the AFC. You feel?
Yeah. In the NFC from the East, you'd have to throw in Dallas, probably Philadelphia as well. I think the Giants are going to be a lot better next year. That offense really looked like it came together at the end of the year. But
so we're saying Cowboys and Philly.
But Cowboys and Philly in the North. Definitely Green Bay.
What about the Lions?
That's a Super Bowl team.
Look, had they beaten Dallas, which they very easily could have, I mean, they could have advanced. You know, it would have been them versus the Packers, although they haven't won in Green Bay in 20 years.
I don't think so.
I don't either. But we're betting with your life now.
No, I understand.
Packers.
And I feel like I get a bonus if I have fewer.
You do. Bears, you get an extra entry in the swag bag contest.
I don't think I need the Bears.
Anyone from the South right now? I mean, someone's going to win the division and therefore be in the playoffs, but I don't feel any of those teams are Super Bowl ready.
Carolina is really good on defense. If they found a piece or two on offense, it could be competitive, but I don't need any of those teams, no.
No, I'd let it slide. Arizona?
Arizona would be in there. Yeah. I mean, if Carson Palmer stays healthy for a season, which is a big if, but that's kind of the game we're playing here.
So Dallas, Philly, Arizona, Seattle, no San Fran?
No.
Okay.
I don't think they got enough.
And
offense.
The pack. You got five in each conference. Mm-hmm. It's hard right now to picture having to go any deeper than that, isn't it? I mean, I tend to agree with you. You have to always leave open the possibility for the surprise team to make it there, but that surprise team, you know, right now, Philly would be a kind of a surprise team. I mean, Dallas, for all that they've done, have won now a total of two playoff games in the Tony Romo era.
Right.
And we're talking about Tom Brady's the greatest of all time. Well, he lost two Super Bowls. He's been to six Super Bowls. Tony Romo's won two playoff games.
Right.
And he's been a pretty damn good quarterback.
He's been to six Super Bowls. He's been to nine conference championship games. It's ridiculous what Brady has done.
And they're the heavy favorites to win that division going away again.
Right.
Next year. And even if they don't, if Brady were to get hurt and miss the season, nobody, I think, is, even if they would overtake New England in the division, would be a Super Bowl contender.
Sure. And in line with this question, I can't pick anybody but New England in the AFC right now. I get that I think Baltimore is going to be pretty good next year. I think Pittsburgh's going to be pretty good.
Baltimore to me is almost like the next team.
Right.
Partly because they play New England so tough.
Partly because they play the Patriots so tough and because Indianapolis can't stay on the field.
Right.
With New England. And they're kind of the cream of the crop right now.
You could almost, because if it weren't for Andrew Luck just being Andrew Luck, you could almost eliminate Indy because they can't get over that Patriot hump. But who knows? Maybe Baltimore takes them out. You know, maybe they don't have to play them. And the one thing about Indy is, unlike the Andy Dalton-led Bengals, they advance a little bit further every year.
They do.
Right? So.
They do. And who knows? Eventually, they're going to figure out a way to beat New England. Maybe. But if I had to pick a team from the AFC right now, it would have to be New England. And the NFC, I feel like, is a bit more wide open because
although
the Seahawks
lost. I would say Seahawks, Arizona, Green Bay would be my three
those
favorites.
Would be the three heavies.
Yeah, because we're assuming they get Carson Palmer back. And as good as Arizona was without a reasonable NFL quarterback this year, you know, so you're anticipating maybe they get a running back in there to help Ellington.
They were the best team in the conference when Carson Palmer was healthy. And it's just, can he stay healthy for a season? I don't think
Bruce Arians has already said they'll be dressing in the 49er locker room next
year.
We'll
see.
Did you see that?
Yeah, I saw that. I don't know that I can trust them to stay healthy for the whole year, so why not? New England, Green Bay.
A couple others on Twitter. I would have Pat and the Packers. Brady wins number five. Packers v. Jaguars. Hashtag California Dreaming. Whatever. I'm with you. I would say, yeah, Green Bay. I don't think Seattle makes it back for a third consecutive year. They're enough. I mean, they certainly could. They'll be among the contenders.
I'm curious to see how this offseason plays out.
I am, too. Does Russell Wilson take the full $20 million? How is that? If he's already being perceived as being put apart and separated above his teammates by certain factions in that locker room, what will that contract potentially do? It's certainly not going to help along that score. Bottom line is they were a play away from winning the Super Bowl for the second consecutive year. You can't rule them out.
No.
I just think it's unlikely. We haven't seen, although we talked about it earlier, Bob Greasy helped lead the Dolphins to three Super Bowls. We forget about that in a row. Buffalo certainly did it with four. It's been done. It's tough to do. I wouldn't put it past him. I think home field would have to be a big component of that. And I think if you get a full season of Carson Palmer, it's going to be that much tougher to win home field throughout the NFC playoffs. Doesn't mean you won't win the division, but will you have home field throughout the playoffs? And that could be the sole determining factor when it comes down to it. All right, that does it for us today. Thanks to Lauren Brooks for joining us today on this Tuesday afternoon. By the way, if you're wondering when you're going to start to hear from some of the new coaches on the staff, I've been told press conferences likely Thursday morning, and some of those will probably air live during Jaguars Today during that time period. And I've also been told we'll get a chance to welcome in each of the new the four new coaches on the offensive side of the football here on Jaguars Today in due time. Hopefully over the course of the next couple weeks, we'll have a sit down with each of those guys from Greg Olson on down. So we look forward to that as well. We look forward to the boys of XL Primetime coming up next.